Welcome. This is a nighttime story about the timeless magic and wonder of Vincent van Gogh's The Starry Night. So soften the lights, get cozy. It's time to unwind. Tonight we find ourselves in an art gallery at a special exhibition unlike any other. Our thoughts are softening slowly and sweetly from the brace of ironclad reality as we step into the swirling, dynamic dream space of a painter's imagination. At your feet are a variety of meandering paths. Some are paved, others are rough-hewn and natural. Waves lap softly at your shoes from yet another, while a river burbles past over a trail of shining rocks nearby. There are paths lined with mossy stones and flowers, others flanked by trees, but each one leads you somewhere different. Above you, the stars twinkle from a dreamy, dark sky. Mist curls around your fingertips as a distant fog rolls in. Rain dances over your skin, and a rogue wind twirls past in a careless rush. There is snow and fallen leaves, the bright smell of spring, and the hazy, lingering warmth of a summer night. Here is the place where the art speaks and the heart listens. And now, as you take your first tentative steps forward with the setting sun at your back, it is your turn to hear what the gallery has to say. The fading embers of sunset are sparking and crackling into stars through the enveloping smokescreen of darkness. Errant rays flicker at your feet before petering out with a soft hiss. Slowly but surely, begin to leave the real world behind. Each step draws you further and further into the magic. Reality gives way to artistry and yields to the inspired eye of a singular visionary. The path branches off into different landscapes, from wheat fields to orchards to flowering fields, each distinct, yet each distinctive for the man who painted them, Vincent van Gogh. The blue-eyed dreamer with a stormy, star-lit soul. His works unfold before you as you pass by, unmarked by the passage of time, yet sensitive to the rising moon above you. The sunflowers have all tucked in for the night, golden heads bowed and resting on bronzed, bent necks. They acknowledge your presence with a slight nod before following the sun to sleep. A light breeze weaves its way around you and up through the slender boughs of a blossoming almond tree. Snowy petals drift dreamily past and scatter amid the field of grain before you, beyond this blue-hued expanse is Van Gogh's pièce de résistance, The Starry Night. Even from this distance, the iconic scene is captivating. Your eyes skim over it as you begin to wade, waist high, through the wheat field. A vibrant, swirling sky rising and crashing like the ocean's wave over a slumbering little village. There is the towering cypress tree on one end of the canvas and the shining grove of olives on the other, all set against the backdrop of the Alpilles Mountains. Above their rounded, rolling peaks are the spiraling, spiralized stars that you've seen as many times as the real ones. Van Gogh himself deemed the Starry Night a failure. And yet, the painting has mesmerized millions of viewers for well over a century. In many ways, it shares a certain kinship with the Eiffel Tower. Both were completed within months of the other in 1889, the centennial of the French Revolution. In Paris, there was an uproar over the monument's unusual design and a widespread protest among the artistic community. 700 kilometers away, in Arles, there was the gnawing silence and cooling opinions of the artist's harshest critic, himself. Neither creation was meant to be enduring. The Eiffel Tower was intended to stand for 20 years only before disassembly. The Starry Night was one not thought likely to see the light of day. And yet, both have transcended expectations to become much-loved fixtures of the public consciousness. Gustave Eiffel, dismissed as a mere builder of machines, a man of Baroque and mercantile fancies, whose useless and monstrous tower would bring ruin to the city, stood steadfast against the raging storm of criticism. He responded to these rampant protestations in an interview for Le Temps, saying, "Are we to believe that because one is an engineer, one is not preoccupied by beauty in one's constructions, or that one does not seek to create elegance as well as solidity and durability? Is it not true that the very conditions which give strength also conform to the hidden rules of harmony?" Gustave Eiffel further claimed that his structure would give a great impression of strength and beauty, for it would reveal to the eyes of the observer the boldness of the design as a whole. His words could just as easily have described the Starry Night, a singular delight to which ordinary theories of art are scarcely applicable. The tension surrounding the Eiffel Tower's construction was the very same one which greeted Van Gogh's work, that of polite misunderstanding at best, and mistrust at worst. Both creators were ahead of their time, both on the cutting edge of an artistic revolution. The Starry Night is a testament to Van Gogh's creative genius and to the unique style he pioneered. As you approach his most celebrated work of art, you notice that it is almost more sculpture than painting. There is an astonishing three-dimensional quality to the canvas, with its richly textured surface and visible brushstrokes. His paintings are well known for this intensely layered effect. Yet the technique itself has its origins in the Renaissance. Rembrandt and Rubens, Titian and Vermeer, all used impasto in their works. Derived from the Italian verb meaning to paste, impasto gives artists the freedom to go beyond the plane of the canvas. The paint is applied and blended directly on the canvas so that the pigment is built up into thick layers. During the Renaissance, this effect was used sparingly to create physical depth and visible texture to the painting. It gave folds to clothing and facets to jewelry because the roughened surface of the canvas caused light to interact with it more organically. No matter the source illuminating the painting, be it lamp or sun or candle, the light would catch and break over the uneven layers of paint, coaxing brighter highlights and deeper shadows out of the artwork. By the time that Van Gogh began to use impasto, however, a new side to the technique was emerging. The Renaissance painters reveled in the realism that they could achieve using it. The post-impressionist painters, of which Van Gogh was a part, celebrated the expressiveness that such a style provided. Impasto, by its very nature, calls attention to the artistry of the piece. It is a self-reflexive medium, one that celebrates the act of its creation rather than effacing it. The mirror-smooth canvases painted by an invisible hand are eschewed in favour of bold textures and visible brushstrokes. The painting tells a meta-narrative, the story of the speed and pressure and shape of the artist's strokes, of the emotions present as they brought their subject to life. The Starry Night is no exception. It has a certain unabashed quality to it, triumphant with the short, vigorous movements of Van Gogh's brushes. They convey high emotion and a palpable urgency amid the serenity of the scenery. There is motion and dynamism in this frozen moment in time. The stars are suspended in an eternal vortex. The sky rolls on in perfect stillness. But, as you finally reach the painting, a curious thing seems to happen. The stars seem to pulse and glimmer, and the whirling winds start spiraling through the canvas. It envelops you, ushers you forward, and then completely pulls you in. The wind deposits you in front of the cypress tree before meandering off. The cypress towers over you, a textured tangle of branches and brushstrokes wrought from shades of bottle green. The air is infused with the smoky sweet perfume of its leaves, a fragrant, if bracing, mix of evergreen and spice. The cypress tree, so exaggerated and imposing in scale, seems less to have grown than to have erupted, fully formed from the earth. Its bold, powerful branches flare wildly upwards in long, sinuous strokes. They stretch their curving fingers out to their fullest extent, as if they could keep on growing through sheer force of will. This is a tree long held in memory as a symbol of death and mourning. It is evergreen, yet will not regenerate if over-trimmed. It is the tree associated with the underworld, the one bearing its own epitaph. Funereal cypresses, as they are often called, stand guard over the graves of countless cemeteries. Is this mighty tree before you a testament to the artist's pain, to a grief and loneliness all-consuming? Is it an embodiment of Van Gogh himself, the artist transformed like the mythical Cyparissus into the tree of his namesake? Perhaps. Or perhaps Van Gogh's intention was more stylistic than symbolic. Cypress trees grew in abundance outside of his window in Arles, and they featured in a number of his paintings during this time. He dedicated an entire series to them, a robust exploratory series meant to capture these trees in depth. The highly textured back of this particular cypress is a dense, dark green, an intriguing choice of colour which softens the overall effect. Shades of rust and burgundy contour the tree's broad body, while liberal streaks of gold throughout provide a gilt edge to moonlit highlights. How curious it is that the cypress should be painted in colour rather than intimated in simple silhouette. Even the shrubs beside it have been rendered in a brighter, verdant hue than the late hour should suggest, with curvaceous dark blue accents for shadows. But this principle holds true for the entire scene before you. There is more colour than darkness to be found. Here, in this land of eternal night, it is a startling revelation, but one that makes sense when considering Van Gogh's own thoughts on the matter. As the artist himself said, he experienced the night as being much more alive and richly coloured than the day. There was more interest, more texture, more intrigue to be discovered in the darkness. Even stars, to Van Gogh, were far more than just white points dotted against the broad swathes of black sky. Instead, they glowed in glimmering shades of yellow and pink and green. This may seem like pure whimsy or mere poetic license, but there is a remarkable truth to his perceptions. When viewed through a telescope or even with a pair of strong binoculars, the stars above take on different tints, which range from warm reds and oranges to cool blues and greens, to a radiant white. This dynamic palette corresponds to the size and surface temperature of these celestial bodies, giving further insight into their ages and life expectancies. The stars of red and orange are the old souls of the cosmos, the ones who have aged gracefully and who can now look back fondly upon full lives. Their heat has dissipated with their youth, and they are slowly fading away. Yellow stars and white stars, by contrast, are the middle-aged ones. They are larger and brighter than our sun, and on a steady course to make it to a ripe old age. It is the blue stars, however, the youngest ones, who leave us far too soon. Blue stars live a feverish existence. They are hyperactive, burning more and more brightly until they erupt in a blaze and are extinguished forever. Van Gogh was one such being. His supernova would come less than a year after painting The Starry Night, but in this oil-painted eternity, there is simply the experience of life in the moment, and in this moment only. Gazing upwards at the most famous night sky the world has ever known, you count 1, 2, 3, 11 stars swirling in their radiant orbs above you, with hearts of red and green rimmed yellow. Some are haloed in buttery floral shades of sunflower and marigold. Others in the soft blues and whites of hyacinth and lily. Their bright petals are unfolded in full nocturnal bloom. The largest of these, and by far the most brilliant, is none other than Venus herself. In June 1889, the same month in which The Starry Night was painted, Van Gogh wrote a letter to his brother Theo, which recounted how one night he had seen the countryside from his window a long time before sunrise, with nothing but the morning star, which looked very big. Venus, indeed, would have been shining at her best and brightest during this time. Scholars have confirmed that this aptly named morning star, whose light is second only to the moon, would have remained visible well into the dawn. She is fittingly wreathed in a blazing white glow, the crowning incandescent peony in this atmospheric bouquet. In keeping with her namesake, Venus has emerged from the cosmic sea foam tonight to grant her favor over you. She is the goddess of love and beauty, the guiding light for all yearning romantics. And Van Gogh, fraught with her same fiery energy, her same blinding, eclipsing passion, which led him to sever part of his own ear, may have found in her his muse. In this boldly depicted morning star, Van Gogh could channel all of his hope and his heartbreak. She certainly is rapturous in her shining cloak. She lights your way forward and wraps you in her luminous embrace. Following her example, our sister planet's starry companions are each shining with their own euphoric certainty. But for all of their spectacular brightness, the night is illuminated by the very sky itself. Creamy cobalt blue and the darker lapis lazuli tones of ultramarine. The vivid gold-tinged orange of Indian yellow, coupled with the milder lemony zinc yellow. These were the exact pigments chosen by Van Gogh to ignite his celestial vault. They shimmer, crystalline, richly hued, and impossibly vibrant. Oil paints sourced from a unique moment in history. The seeds of radical change. the type of change which would lead artists to revolt against the Eiffel Tower or dismiss Van Gogh's work as too individualistic, had been sown over half a century earlier, during the Industrial Revolution. Van Gogh knew only this world reborn, an age of steam engines and railroads, where factories were out-competing farms and transformation was everywhere. The art world had experienced its own period of growth, though a great debt was owed to a different industry. Makers of textiles faced an ever-growing demand for more and more coloured fabrics. As such, new and enhanced versions of pigments were regularly being developed to dye these materials, and the artist's palette began to expand alongside it. One such shade was cobalt blue, a pigment deemed by Van Gogh as a divine colour. He declared that there was nothing so beautiful for putting atmosphere around things. Gazing upwards at the lyrical mix of silky cobalt and the deep, velvety ultramarine, it is easy to see what he meant. The effervescent night sky emerges from the canvas in bold strokes and bolder colours. A strange, ethereal melody accompanies it. This is the elusive music of the spheres, composed by the harmonious movements of the celestial bodies. It is inaudible to human ears, but here, within this rare, creative dimension, the universe's soaring song is made known to you. Vincent van Gogh, now believed to have possessed a form of synesthesia, may have heard it too. Van Gogh, like all other synesthetes, would have experienced a cross-wiring of the senses that occurred simultaneously to a given stimulus. For some, it would be that they could taste sounds or see words. For Van Gogh, he could hear colour. Living with chromesthesia would have meant that sound and colour would be involuntarily intertwined. Van Gogh once wrote that certain artists painted with a violin's tremulous timbre, and he reported enormous difficulty in his short-lived attempt to learn piano. Whenever Van Gogh would press down a key, a distinct burst of colour would appear in his mind. It would have been similar to a mental fireworks display. Each tone would erupt in a unique shade that had its own speed and trajectory, and which could dim or brighten or alter in hue depending on the length and volume of the note being played. And then, just as quickly as it happened, it would vanish abruptly into the silence. Van Gogh's piano instructor, so alarmed to hear of his student's experience, declared Van Gogh mad and banned him from returning to his class. But was synesthesia alone responsible for these sensory entanglements? Van Gogh was extremely well known for his indulgence in absinthe, the high-proof alcohol which many believed to possess certain hallucinogenic properties. Nicknamed the Green Fairy for its distinctive emerald colour and its mystic mind-altering effects, absinthe is a drink that sharpens rather than dulls the senses. Edvard Munch, the acclaimed painter of The Scream, described drinking absinthe as perceiving all sensations by all senses at once. "My own impression," he said, "is that I am breathing sounds and hearing colours, that sense produce a sensation of lightness or weight, roughness or smoothness, as if I were touching them with my fingers. This description sounds remarkably like synesthesia. The absinthe Van Gogh consumed could have heightened, or perhaps normalized, his chromesthesia by inducing an altered reality that complemented the oddities of his own. But for all the chaos competing for space in his mind, the singular vision of his work is undeniable. Van Gogh was at the forefront of post-impressionism, an artistic movement that celebrated a reality that was heightened, stylized, and achingly expressive. Van Gogh and his contemporaries still favored real-life subjects and landscapes, but they experimented with scale and color, symbolism and abstraction to communicate the experience of the painting. His oeuvre was of a reality that was far more figurative than literal. Van Gogh's artistic ethos may well have been summed up when he remarked that he, and other painters like him, strove to create a more exciting and comforting nature that we can discern with a single glimpse of reality. Within this dreamscape, you too are a part of this comforting nature that he described. Your eyes tonight are Van Gogh's own, and your senses are newly awakened to the splendor of the world around you. The night sky serenades you with a symphony of stars. The bright, clear tones of a cooler palette, tempered by the warmth and resonance that the darker shades bring. It dances like the northern lights in the crisp evening air, an incandescent shimmering that echoes out over the mountains. The music lifts and dips and spirals, a capricious otherworldly wind that sets the sky in motion. The sky doesn't roar and recede like the ocean, but hums sweetly as it rolls ever on in long, unhurried waves. For all the chaos that a cursory glance might suggest, the sky is inherently peaceful in its gentle undulations. Though the temperature has dipped with the lateness of the hour, there is still a lingering warmth of a summer evening. The wind which summoned you here has since settled down into a light breeze. It ruffles your hair affectionately and skims over your skin as you journey on towards the village. It is far and away the most structured portion of the painting, with its neat arrayment of humble houses rendered in precise, straight strokes. Where the cypress has grown wild and unchecked on the outskirts of the canvas, the little village has been dutifully constructed with a clear plan in mind. The houses range in color from blue to gray. Some have brown and red accents, or have hints of green and white in their slanted, striated roofs. The odd window is illuminated, awash in a cheery, welcoming glow, though the astounding silence suggests that the entire village has gone to sleep, completely oblivious to the masterpiece unfolding above them. Perhaps the cosmic chorus has laid an enchantment over them, and the stars have sung them sweetly off to sleep. Or perhaps this night, this grand, spectacular night, is just like any other one here, and that this is something to be taken for granted. On through the silent streets you go, wandering the winding road until you reach the doorstep of the church. It is the very heart of the town, the gathering place, the beacon of community and kinship. Its towering steeple pierces the sky like a lightning rod, channeling the same dawn-lit blue in its pristine paintwork. The tranquil hue seems to ground the energy of the stars, or else to be tapping into it. But for all its quiet strength and the lofty height of its steeple, the church cannot compete with the size and grandeur of the cypress. For Van Gogh, a man-made house of worship was no comparison to the glory of the natural world. His cypress looms like a dark cathedral, far removed from the town and its citizens, yet no less worthy of earthly admiration. It could not be more different from the pastel forest before you now. The dreamy blue-green hues of the olive trees, the delicate touch of moonlight dappling their branches. Even the shadows they cast seem vibrant. Beyond is the Alpbeels Mountains. These little Alps call out to you in invitation. Olive trees become oaks and pines the further you ascend as the greenery thins out. In the daytime, their low-rolling limestone peaks would take on a honeyed hue. Tonight, they are gemmy blue, ultramarine, threaded with touches of green and black and gold. Each summit limed in a shining stream of mint and silver as the moon's glow echoes into the oncoming dawn. She should be a waning gibbous, but Van Gogh has chosen to paint her as a crescent moon instead. She is at the final stage of the lunar cycle, when the darkness is outpacing the light, and death and rebirth are fast approaching. The moon shines sun-like in her iridescent halo, graceful and dignified until the end. In her light is a wilderness that cannot be contained. The stars sway and swirl and murmur musicality. The cypress tree straightens and stretches its branches unapologetically, while the village slumbers on in pedestrian reality. The natural world has been infused with lunacy. The bright, shimmering moon madness that brings this scene to life. As your eyes scan over the countryside from your pigmented perch, your gaze catches on something unusual. Not quite beyond the canvas, but not quite within it either. The edges are softened, the colours muted, in this halfway point between dreaming and waking. A building comes into focus, then a floor, a wing, and finally, a window. Venus, bright morning star, pours all of her attention onto it, like a spotlight. Her light streams past the iron bars and floods over the floorboards of a modest room until suddenly. Her slanted rays are abruptly intercepted. A figure appears at the window, blinking against the intense brightness of the stars. A glimpse of red hair, a glimmer of blue eyes. And you are on your feet. His gaze sharpens, more intent now, as he witnesses the play of light and shadow over the moonlit land and the riotous multitude of colours tumbling out before him. The man drinks his fill of the beauty around him, his awe and wonder mirroring your own. This building is the St. Paul de Mazol, a monastery turned hospital. Van Gogh would live here up until the final 2 months of his life. There are only a year's worth of starry nights left for him. Yet in this moment, in this painting, he has found eternity. Only after his death did Van Gogh become recognized for the true visionary that he was. Other artists and collectors began to stage retrospectives of his artwork, and a curious public took note. They were captivated by this tragic, romantic figure whose style was unlike anything they had seen before. Van Gogh's craftsmanship became iconic. The expressive colour palette, the highly textured brushwork, and his unique way of capturing the truth beyond reality. And for this one starry night, the man so troubled and misunderstood is not alone. You are the spellbound wedding guest listening to the ancient mariner's tale. You are the one who pays attention to what he has to say, the one who believes. Tonight, you are both observer and participant, as much a part of his art as his art is a part of you. Vincent van Gogh smiles and turns away, at peace with himself and the world as the morning light intensifies. It gleams and glows brighter and brighter behind you until it becomes all-consuming. And, like a dream, you find yourself back in the gallery once more. Thanks for taking the time to unwind with me tonight.